We are joined right now by a member of the U.S. Olympic team, a four-time national champion at Notre Dame, an All-American, footlocker cross-country champion in both high school and in college. She finished second at the Olympic marathon trial in her very first marathon. Molly Seidel is my guest. Molly, it's so nice to have you on. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Super to have you. So normally we'd be talking about the Olympics right now, but and what you accomplished in Atlanta and your preparations for Tokyo, but given that it's been postponed for a year, you did support USA Track and Field's call to postpone the games. But at the same time, how challenging is it to know that you have to wait another year, and how are you approaching that?
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing with the postponement, but I think in the end, this is 100% the right call for the IOC and our track governing body here in the U.S., USATF. It's just really not, I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to be going out in 4 months and competing at the Olympic Games when we're still really in the thick of it with coronavirus worldwide. So it's presenting a new set of challenges with training, but I'm trying to look at it as an opportunity. I get a full extra year now to try and get a little bit better at the marathon distance, because kind of like you said, I've only done one at this point. So it might be a cool opportunity for me to try and race another one, maybe like a New York or a Chicago or Boston marathon in the fall, and then just see where we are by next summer when we finally get to do the games.
You can follow her at ByGollyMolly12 on Twitter, which I love. Molly Seidel is joining us. Now, you made the point that you were able to do your training and your qualifying at a time before coronavirus could impact you. Could you imagine training and preparing for the trials or the Olympics themselves at this point? I mean, how impossible would that be?
Well, that's the challenging thing. Before the games were officially postponed, many of my friends and other fellow pro runners here in Boston, where I live and train, were trying to do just that, because the games were still set to go this summer. They were worrying that they weren't going to be able to do the Olympic trials or to train. Basically, every competition had been canceled, and they were putting their own safety basically on the line, just trying to go out and train every day. Every track has been closed. Every gym has been closed. I just don't really see how it would have been possible for them to stay healthy while trying to train for something of this magnitude. So I'm very glad for the postponement for their sake. So mostly right now we're all kind of just in a holding pattern, trying to do our runs but not really train for anything specific and just get through the worst of this.
Molly Seidel is my guest. Now, you've got an amazing story, and I want to get into it in a moment so people truly understand what you've accomplished, because you've been working at a coffee shop. There's this angle that you're a barista who qualified for the Olympics the first time she entered a marathon. I mean, it's pretty funny, but it's not the whole story. So if we were to go all the way back, how did you first get into running, and what was it about the sport that you liked so much?
Yeah, I first got into it actually through my church growing up. We didn't have a track team at my school. I went to a very, very small school. So my CCD was letting kids train with their track team. And so I hopped in, found that I was pretty good at it, and then kind of just continued from there, went through into high school and ended up winning a few state titles and eventually the national championship my senior year, and got a scholarship through college. So I think the media kind of jumped on this idea of, oh, yeah, this plucky barista who never ran before just, like, qualified for the Olympics. But I think it's
incredible.
The story's a little bit more complicated than that.
Amazing.
I am a professional runner, but I work a side hustle just to kind of make ends meet, because running isn't exactly the most lucrative of sports.
It is really a funny story that you just kind of jumped out there and, hey, I think I'll try this little marathon thing. But the fact is, you're kind of underselling this. You had an amazing high school career in Wisconsin, which included winning all four 1600 and 3200 runs in track and field. You set state records in both. You won four cross country titles. You won the Foot Locker cross country championships in 2011. So how would you describe your experience running in high school?
Yeah, I would say running in high school, it was Wisconsin isn't a huge state, so I don't want to say too much that it was like a big fish, small pond, but definitely, like, going from high school to college was definitely that next step up. It was a lot higher of competition, I think. In high school, I got kind of used to being able to go out and easily win races, and then when you move up to that next level, it's definitely a lot harder when you're now against all the best runners in the country who are all the best in their states. So, yeah, I think each time I've gone up a level, there's kind of an adjustment period of, like, okay, get used to this next level, learn how to do this and respond.
Molly Seidel is my guest. So you go to Notre Dame and you arrive with a lot of hype. And as you mentioned, there's a whole different level and a whole different challenge in running in college. A lot of it's great, but there's some really harmful and some unhealthy body image issues that could come along with that. If, Molly, you're comfortable talking about that, can you discuss what that experience was like for you?
Yeah. I think the sport of running is one that kind of has a little bit of a dark side in that it definitely perpetuates this idea that to be faster, you need to be skinnier or smaller, and that the people who succeed in the sport are those who can keep their body weight the lowest. And that leads to a lot of disordered eating. And for me, it really did kind of highlight some of these underlying problems that I've had with OCD and anxiety throughout my life, accentuated that. And it did kind of manifest itself as an eating disorder. I won my national championships, but right after that was sidelined with repeated injury. My weight had dropped about 20 pounds over the course of about a year or so when I was winning these national championships. And it eventually got to the point where I had to seek medical treatment for eating disorder recovery. And it's something that I've dealt with now off and on for the last several years, and something that I still have to pay a lot of attention to. But I'm hoping that my story and the fact that I faced this, overcame it, and now I'm back running at a high level can help other women who are going through it, who may be in college right now, suffering from this, believing that they have to be the absolute lowest body weight to succeed. And I hope that I can show them, like, no, I'm actually running faster now that I'm a higher body weight than I was in college, but I'm stronger and I'm healthier, and that's what's letting me succeed.
You know, I so appreciate you sharing that, and there's no telling how many people have been helped by your willingness to share that. You know, the story goes that you competed at the 2016 Olympic trials because, or you did not, I should say, because you were dealing with a stress fracture. At that point, a teammate from Notre Dame told you that you did not look well. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, that was really kind of my rock bottom moment. It wasn't even that I didn't look well. It was she basically told me that I looked like I was dying. And at that point, I was 95 pounds, like 20 pounds down from my normal weight. And my bones were repeatedly breaking. And that was the wake-up call that I kind of needed. I'd been in a little bit of denial leading up to that point. And her being able to say that from someone that I really trusted and like from one of my best friends was kind of the impetus for me to finally go and get help. And I'm not going to lie, like eating disorder treatment was pretty much the hardest thing I've ever gone through, but I'm glad that I did. And I'm glad that I had people around me who cared about me as a person rather than as a runner and wanted me to be healthy and have a good life, regardless of whether or not it affected my running.
Molly Seidel is my guest. And one more thought about that, because the story goes you left sponsorship money on the table so you can make that decision and take care of yourself. I think a lot of people in your position might have tried to push on through, ignored everything, and just taken that money. Why didn't you?
I think I had a really good support network around me. I had, kind of like I said before, people who were looking out for me more as a person rather than as a runner. And like my parents really couldn't care whether or not I'm running. They want me to be healthy at the end of the day, and they want me to be happy. And so being able to have people like that in my life who are able to let me see, like, okay, if you don't get fully mentally and physically healthy now, it's going to affect you the rest of your life, and you probably won't be running a year or two from now if you don't solve this right now. So I'm glad that I had those people around me. But yeah, it was one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. And truthfully, at the time, I felt like I was giving up on my pro running career. It's hard when you're it feels like you're sitting at the bottom of a well and looking up and wondering how you're going to get out of it. And it just seems impossible. And it's kind of just one step at a time.
One step at a time, one day at a time. You did all the hard work, and then you came back, and then in December, you qualified for the Olympic trials with a really strong showing at the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in San Antonio, including getting a cool fist bump from a young girl at mile 11. What was the plan going into that race, both for the race and the upcoming few months, and then how did that change based on the result?
Yeah, truthfully, going into those races, I had a very open mind about it. I had never done the half marathon. I really didn't know what to expect. And so when I went and did well at the San Antonio half, going into it, my coach and I hadn't really even planned on doing the Olympic trials. I was set to debut at a different marathon, actually. And we kind of talked it over, thought it would be a really cool experience to go for the Olympic trials. Just because I'm so young, we didn't really anticipate that I would be very competitive. Usually women are more competitive in their late 20s or early 30s at the marathon. So going into it, and then with the half in Houston when I ran a better time than I did in San Antonio, kind of this slow build of like, okay, like maybe I can do this. Maybe like training is going well, like kind of raising the expectation each time. But even the day before the race, my coach, when we were sitting down, was like, okay, worst case scenario, you get probably 15th tomorrow. Best case scenario, you maybe get third. So it was definitely out of the blue to find myself in second place going into mile 20 and like, okay, now you really like are in it and you've got to commit to this.
Talking to Molly Seidel, then as you mentioned, you did run faster at the Houston half in January. You ran with Molly Huddle. And then you had an Instagram post the other day that read, before the Houston half back in January, I was worried my training was not enough, that I couldn't work out as hard as veteran marathoners did. A really smart friend sitting next to me on the bus started to say something. Who was that friend and what did that friend tell you?
So the friend sitting next to me on the bus over to the start line in Houston was Alphine Tillamook, who is the winner of the women's Olympic trials. And she's definitely she's a close friend of mine, someone I look up to enormously. And she's been through her own share of struggles. She had been through a severe stress fracture in her sacrum and come back from that. And basically, she told me, like, your training isn't going to be like anyone else's because you're not like anyone else. Like, you can't keep comparing yourself to all these women. You need to just focus on what you can do. And that meant a lot coming from her, who's someone that I see as an enormously successful runner. And so being able to have her there with me for those final 6 miles in the marathon trials, not only the advice that she had given me in the past, but then that support that she gave me over those final 6 miles when we weren't racing, we were working together to get to the finish line and to make that team together. It was really special.
I was going to say, Molly, so what was that like? So when you're working with her for the last 6 miles and given all the work and everything you had to come back from to finish the trials, to hit the finish line, she's waiting for you there. You know you're headed to the Olympics. What was that moment like?
It was just this sense of like, it's been my dream since I was a little kid to make an Olympic team. And it's, I think, every runner's ultimate dream to be able to wear the USA singlet in the Olympics. And so crossing that line, it's just this enormous sense of, like, relief and accomplishment. One, relief because you don't have to run anymore. You finally get to rest. But also just, like, wow, like, I can't believe that actually happened. And just this, like, washing over of, like, happiness. Like, Alphine's there, who's been working with me so hard over the last 26.2 miles. My family is there waiting for me. My coach is there, and he's been, like, just through it with me. And it meant so much because, like, all of these people who had meant so much to me and helped me get to that point were all there to celebrate it with me. It was a really, really fun, special moment.
Isn't that beautiful? Let me ask you this before you go. So, like, at the end of the marathon, your first marathon, what was more challenging? Was it managing, I would imagine, the inevitable physical pain or maybe the emotion of the moment in the end?
Yeah, I think it's probably both because, so, like, obviously when you're getting to mile 20 of a marathon, you're so tired and you still have 10 kilometers to go. You still have a lot of racing left and your legs don't want to move, but you know you have to keep pushing. And then also realizing, oh my gosh, I'm in second place. And trying to not psych myself out at that point, not to think too much and not to think of all of the women who are very fast that I'm ahead of and thinking like, oh my gosh, Desiree Linden, who is the Boston Marathon winner, three-time Olympian,
wow,
is right behind me. Sally Kipiego, who's a world silver medalist, is right behind me, and not freaking out and being able to say, okay, I'm just going to focus on what I need to do right now and to just stay with Alphine and just run my race right now. If they catch me, they catch me. It's fine. Just go with it. And so, yeah, trying to manage both the mental stress and the just physical pain you're going through. It's a balancing act.
Oh, amazing. All right, so finally, you posted on Instagram, quote, I've waited my whole life for this moment to make the Olympics safer for everyone. I'm willing to wait a bit longer. So how do you go about approaching the next year in preparation for the Olympics?
Yeah, so right now, we're just kind of trying to get through this very difficult time. I'm in Boston right now, and obviously, we're kind of under a lockdown. So it's just going day to day and not trying to plan too far in the future. Hopefully, if things open up by the fall and they're their races being held, we'll start to put together a race schedule, some distances between the 10K and the marathon, and then hopefully culminate with a bigger marathon later in the fall. And then we'll see as we go into next spring. It's a world cross country championship year that's in Australia. So we'll potentially think about trying to qualify for that team. And then, yeah, just really gearing up for a long marathon build leading into Tokyo. So it'll be preparation and require a lot of flexibility with the current state of the world. But yeah, I think I'm pretty good with dealing with unknown. So we'll just try and ride it out.
She is a member of the U.S. Olympic team. She was a four-time national champion at Notre Dame and All-American as well, and did finish second at the Olympic marathon trial in her very first marathon. Molly, so nice to meet you. What a great conversation. What a great story. I'm so glad that you shared it with us and our listeners. And really nice to have you on the program, Molly. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was fun. Molly Seidel. Great story, great message, and I applaud her courage in sharing her story, and there's no telling how many people she helped by sharing what she's gone through and the way she came out the other end.